I'd like to talk about some studies we've been doing with yellow star thistle to look at the impact of a guild of seed feeders that we've introduced against yellow star thistle in cooperation with the USDA ARS, who handled the host testing and the introduction of these agents. So Joe gave a good introduction into yellow star thistle as a pest in the western United States, and I'll just try and repeat as little of that as possible. California is the place where yellow star thistle seems to be the most abundant, and it occurs over 5 million hectares in California alone. It produces multiple flower heads, but unlike the other knapweeds, the yellow star thistle has long, sharp spines, and these are actually hard spines, and they're quite pointed and uncomfortable, and so not only disliked by grazing animals, but they're also disliked by hikers and others, recreational people as well. We've introduced a total of 7 insects introduced, and all of them have been seed head feeders. Of them, only 6 established. Yellow star thistle is an annual, unlike the other knapweeds, which are biennials or short-lived perennials. Yellow star thistle is an annual, and it's an obligate outcrosser, and it reproduces solely by seed. And so it does not self, but rather requires pollen from other plants to produce fertile seeds. It produces 2 types of seeds, a brown seed with pappus, which is found on the side, the middle of the head, and then black seed, naked seed, which is around the outside of the head. And I'll mention that in more detail in a bit. And seed production in individual plants can change by orders of 3 orders of magnitude. So we can have very, very large plants with tens of thousands of seeds, and we can have a single plant with only 10 seeds or even 1 seed if we want. So here's a picture of the seeds or the achenes of yellow star thistle. And you can see how yellow star thistle looks like a knapweed. It has that characteristic white nap that's in the center of the head. The pappus seed has these long setae that come out the top, and they occur in the center of the head. And then the naked black seeds occur on the outside of the head. And so actually there's 2 kinds of florets that are formed. They're actually all the same floret, it's just that they produce a different kind of seed. And there's the ratio between the two is approximately 3 to 1, 3 to 3 pappus seed to 1 non-pappus seed. And the seed head feeders all attack this seed, the immature stages of these seed head buds, and the larvae are inside the head and destroy and consume the seed. So in order to understand how possible efforts of control, we wanted to look at the seed bank. And this is a study that was done in the late 1990s and early 2000. And the blue lines are the pappus bearing seed. And we started out with about 12,000. We went to an area and we marked off with a fence of about 20 meters by 20 meters. And it wasn't necessarily a dense patch of yellow star thistle, but it wasn't a light patch either. It was about medium or representative of this area. And this is an area that's ungrazed. It's in a riparian area that's along a creek, but up in the higher area that's not flooded actually by the creek. So we roped off an area of about 20 meters by 20 meters, and then we went in with the hand scythe and we cut down any plants that would bolt, so there'd actually be no seed production of any kind. And then we've sampled the soil for this seeds that would be there. So this started out in late summer, around early October, before the winter rains that would begin, because California has a long summer drought and there'd be no reproduction at that, or no germination at that time. Then when the rains would come, then there'd be a big flush of germination. And you can see that in the seeds of the pappus here. They started out, we had about 12,000 seeds per square meter. And then after that first rain, it dropped down, down to less than 4,000. And then through that winter rain, there'd be more and more flush of germination throughout the winter. And you can see that decline and down to about February, and then the flush stopped, and then the seeds would sit in the soil and we wait until the next year. So by the time we got to the next year, which would be about December, this would be right after the next rain here. This would be before the rain of the next year. This is the right after the rain. We would have about a 90% decline in the seed bank just after 1 year. Most of the loss was due to germination, but there was a bit of a loss from here to here that was due to other reasons, either just pathogens or maybe rodents. But the soil seed bank, then we continued this on for a couple more years until we could actually got no more seeds. After 2001, there was no more seeds at all. So actually the seed bank's fairly short-lived. If we can stop all seed production in 4 years, we probably won't have any more seed bank there. So that's a really a good thing. That's an advantage to the system. The red line is the non-pappus seed. The non-pappus seed sits in the head. The pappus of the seed forces it out in the summer when the head dries out, and it forces the seed out and falls into the ground. The non-pappus seeds sit into the head, and they wait until the whole plant decays in the winter. And so that's what we see here. This is the expression of the black seed leaving the head. So we get a little peak of flush of seeds that are now, as the heads fall apart, they fall into the soil. They enter the soil seed bank much later, and the number of black seeds then just retains. And actually, it's the black seed that tend to become more common later after 1 or 2 years. And so it's a strategy of the plant to actually have some seed that can last a little bit longer. So there was the six insects were officially approved. One was an accidental. We've heard some discussion about that. Of those, the ones that have established have become fairly widespread, except the 2 Coeloralia sprite, the Coeloralia australis, which has not become widespread, but it is established, and then Larinus curtis, which also did not become widespread. It's established in only a few places, but we don't come across it very much. And here's some pictures of the agents. So we have the on the left is the gall fly, which forms small galls into the head and displaces the formation of seed. And then another is a weevil, the Bangosternis orientalis. And this is the two succinia flies. And this is the Eustonopus bullosus. The one on the left is, we call it the hairy weevil, because the long setae in the back of the elytra make it look hairy. And the general public can relate to that. And then there's the Larinus curtis, which is the one that's not so common, but it is established. So we wanted to set up a field study to measure the impact. And what we decided to do was, ultimately, we expect all the agents to co-occur on yellow star thistle. So we took all the agents and we released them into areas that they weren't there before. And we all gave them the same head start. The idea was we made releases of all of them at once in that 1 year, and then we would see how they would take off and which ones would start building up in numbers and what kind of impact they would have. So we established 3 field sites in 93-94 for this monitoring. We released 4 of the 4 common seedhead insects at the start of the study. And the locations of the field sites were one in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada up by Auburn, one near Sacramento in the Central Valley, and then one in the coastal mountains in Sonoma County. There were 2 parts to the study. We had to set up a grid system of where we had 10 by 10 1-meter quadrats that were set up, and in the center of the grid was another area that we marked that was 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters. And because the density of the seedlings and the density of the plants was so high, we felt we could just sample that because we got such high numbers. And so we would not walk in the area of the 1 square meter, but we would count only in the center, 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters. And then at the end of the season, we would come back, we would count the number of plants that were present and the number of seed heads per plant. So we get an estimate of density of plants and seed heads per square meter. And then we'd set some transects up where we would put rods in the ground, and then we would identify plants closest to the rod that flowered, plants that flowered closest to the rod, and we would put small bags around the seed heads. And the bags would collect any seeds that would form and any insects that would be present inside. And because this is an indeterminate animal, annual, meaning that it will continue flowering as long as it has the right moisture, it has a long flowering period. So we would have to come back every week or every 2 weeks and put bags on as the new flowers generated throughout the season. So, and at the end of the whole season, then we would come back and we would harvest all the plants, bring everything back to the laboratory, dissect them looking and identify which insects were present and any seeds that were there. To measure seed production, we counted viable seeds. And so to test what seed were viable, we germinated all the seed that we had. And we would put them on petri dishes, on blotter paper, we would put moisture on them, and then we would hold them for 7 days. And then any seeds that germinated, we would count. And any seed at the end of 7 days that had not germinated, we would slice open with a razor blade and look at the endosperm. If it was healthy endosperm, we would consider it viable anyway. If it was black or unhealthy or unfilled seeds, then we're not counted. So when I report total seed production, I'll be reporting those seeds that germinated plus those with healthy endosperm at the end of the 7 days. So what do we find at Sonoma County? The blue line is a Bangosternis orientalis, and this is one of the earliest agents that we had released there. And it had built up to about 10% after a couple years, and then slowly declined, and it stayed low through the rest of the duration of the monitoring period. Urofera was one of the other early agents, that's the gall fly, and it built up to about 20% and kind of held pretty steady until the after about 7 years or so, and then it caused a decline and then came back, and then now it's bounced around between 10 and 20% since. So it's kind of reached what it appears to be a stable population level as well. Eustenopus bullosus, the hairy weevil, is the one that continued increasing in numbers for the next 3 years, and then has been bouncing around between 60 to 80% attack rates since then. And the Keterelia succinia, the one that was accidentally introduced, it actually entered on its own, flew into the area. It's beginning in 1998, and it has slowly built up, but it hasn't really reached high numbers. It hasn't exceeded 30% parasitism rate or attack rates during the study. But so it looks like the Eustenopus bullosus is the one that seems to be the most abundant insect in our study sites here. So how did that translate into the plant control? So the graph on the upper left is the number of plants per square meter. And so and this line that goes up here is the percentage of seed heads that are attacked by all agents combined. So this is representing the stress on the seed heads of the plant population. So as we look at this, the number of plants per square meter, there's really little change. It was pretty stable throughout the first 4 years. And then on year five, well, actually released things in 1993, so about year six, then there was a decline. Maybe it was due to weather. We're not sure why. It did decline, and then it rebounded back, and then it declined, and then it went down, and then it stayed down. And actually, numbers, we've continued monitoring past 2004, and the numbers have stayed low ever since. They've all been below just about this size ever since there. So there was a change in the system of about 6 or 7 years. The graph down in the lower left is the number of heads per square meter, and the number of heads square meter also was fairly stable with the number of plants there. And it actually, despite the change in the abundance of plants these 2 years, the actual yield of heads per square meter didn't really change that much until 2001, when there was a decline in the number of heads per square meter. And then up here on the upper right, we have the number of seeds per square meter, and that was estimated by, we looked at the average number of viable seed estimated per head, and then we multiplied it by the number of heads that were present in the population. And what we see is, as the number of insect attack goes up, there was a fairly stable decline in the number of seeds per square meter. And in the lower right, then, is the number of seedlings per square meter, and during those early years, it seemed like yellowstreth thistle over-recruited. It had more seed and more seedlings that it need to recruit for the system, and so we didn't see much change until after about 6 or 7 years, and then at that point, there seemed to be a change, and then the number of seedlings went down. So that was at the site of the coastal mountain range. This is the site in the Central Valley. It's a little bit warmer and much drier, and we see this very similar results there as well. We see Bangosternis, which stayed very low, less than 10% throughout the whole course of the monitoring period. We see Urofera bouncing around between 10 and 20%, sometimes going down, sometimes going back up. We see Eustenopus steadily increasing, not increasing quite at the rate as we saw in the Sonoma County site, but we still a steady increase up to about 60 to 80% bouncing around in there. And then the total number of heads attacked is following that as well. And then the Keterelia coming in and building up, in this case a little bit higher, but staying below 30% throughout the duration as well. So they're both there. And it may be that Eustenopus, being a caecilionid, has the strong mandibles. Maybe it is able to outcompete with Keterelia. We don't really know because we haven't really looked, but it does seem to be that in areas without Eustenopus, Keterelia seems to build up much higher numbers, and Joe has alluded to the fact that he's considered the best agent, because in areas where there is no Eustenopus, Keterelia does build up high numbers, and we'll see that in the next talk, but where Eustenopus is, we seem to see Keterelia doesn't build up as high. And for the plant populations, the number of plants per square meter, the response time was a little bit quicker, but in the same kind of pattern, We had a number of plants slowly started going down. The number of seed heads per square meter kind of bounced around a while, but after about 5 or 6 years, then it started to decline. And then the number of seeds per square meter was a steady decline, and the number of seedlings again bounced around, but then after about 6 or 7 years, we see it to go down, and the numbers actually have stayed down since then. So what are our conclusions from that? The overall attack rate by the Baca Chow insects steadily increased at these sites. Oh, the third site that I didn't mention, we followed for about 4 or 5 years, and then the landowner decided to sell it. And the new landowner who bought it asked us to leave. He didn't want us there. So unfortunately, we weren't in the study long enough to get the results that we wanted. So, but for the two sites that we had for long term, we see the same pattern. Eustonopus at both sites became the most abundant and had the highest attack rate at both sites. And Succinia was second in abundance over the other insects. Both sites showed decreasing trends in seed production, seedling recruitment, adult plant density following release of the agents, and the decline was first observed probably 4 to 6 years after the release. So there was a time lag in there. So we didn't see much happening the first few years, and then later we did see something. But one weakness of this monitoring is that it's all correlational. There was no control in this because the insects were so widespread. It wasn't an area where the insects did not occur, so we could have a control. We had set aside some area near Davis, is about 20 miles south of the site in Yolo County, but we set aside as our control, but unfortunately the insects on their own had moved in there. We had made no releases, but on their own they moved in, so that no longer functioned as a control for us. So in 2002, we established a field study using an insecticide to set up in a control, and we were only able to set this up at the one site in Sonoma County because the yellowstar thistle at Yolo County had declined so much there was no more yellowstar in our plots anymore to work with. So, but we still had some yellowstar in Sonoma County. So we set up another grid, only this grid was 5 by 10, same size, 1 square meter squares, 5 by 10. Set it up in 2002, and we treated 20 quadrats with an insecticide, the imidacloprid, every 2 weeks during late bud through peak flower, and then we also treated plants along the transect to see what kind of impacts we were having with the insecticide to see if it was really working or not. And so the study was done in 2005 and 2006 and again in 2007, but we haven't finished dissecting the plants for 2007, but I can show you the data from 2005 and 6. And those plants receiving the spray, they had significantly higher seed than the ones without the spray. And there was a 39% increase in 2005 and a 68% in seed production in 2006. So it looks like the treatments we're doing were working. They were preventing the insects from completely killing all the seeds, and so there was some change in the pot, in the transects. What's nice about this site is that we had a history of the quadrats before there was any treatments being done. So for 3 years, we counted the number of seedlings, the recruitment at the beginning of the year, for 3 years, and there was no significant difference in the 3 years. The plots were all very, very similar to each other. We began the spray then in 2005, and then after that, the two different treatment areas began to diverge in their projection. So those plots that were receiving the treatments of the insecticide, the recruitment remained stable. It didn't decline, but the ones that received no spray or allowed the insects to go in and destroy seed, there was a steady decline in seed and seedling recruitment. So it shows. I think this is pretty fairly convincing evidence that the insects are probably having an impact on the seedling recruitment of yellowstar thistle. So, and the conclusions we had that. In the treated quadrats, the seedling recruitment remains at the same level over 3 years, and in the untreated ones, they declined in 3 years, and the results suggest that the destruction of seed by the seed feeders had a significant effect on the plant population. So with that, I will end. Thank you.